We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello and welcome into the So Rare Andrews podcast, brought to you by RotoWire and sponsored by So Rare. I am Andrew Laird. You can find me at Lairdino on So Rare. Joined as always by Andy Black, who is Black on So Rare. And today, very special guest, a guy that Andy and I have been talking about behind his back for a very long time, John Nellis. John, you have your own podcast. It's one of the first ones I listen to every week, although I say that and I'm like episodes behind because just the way my schedule is.
You but don't listen to many podcasts.
Just so you know, John, I'm not any episodes behind. I'm caught up.
Oh, all right. Oh,
thanks, yeah. Black. You're the man. You're my favorite. No, you're my favorite Andy. Larry, you have catching up to do.
So, but seriously, like I was listening to the one you did with Quinny yesterday or sometime earlier this week. And I feel like it was like the third episode that I had listened to where I was like, I wanted to talk about it, but like I'm listening to a podcast. I can't talk to you. And I was like, wait a minute. There is a way I can talk to John. And so I DM'd you in the middle of the night. Somehow you were awake and you were game. So thank you very much for coming on.
No, it's an absolute pleasure. I was just saying to you before we went on air, like I listen to the show every week. So it's kind of funny because like I'm a podcaster, but like you're like one of my favorite podcasts. So now I'm like, oh my God, I know these guys, but I don't know, like you say, you're caught up, and it's a weird thing with podcasts. You kind of have this relationship with the people you're listening to every week where you feel you know them. So I kind of feel like I know you. You might kind of feel like you know me, but really we don't know each other. So it's really funny.
That's a really bizarre description, but I 100% feel that same way.
Yeah. So, yeah, I churn out lots of sort of substandard content on a weekly basis. And yeah, here we are. Let's go.
My favorite was I was watching your award reveal from this week with the Tyler Miller, and the immediate like shoulders dropping when you were like, oh, it's an MLS card. Okay. Cause you don't follow MLS like
not
we
just
do.
An MLS card, an MLS goalkeeper.
So then it turned up, but then it was like, you did exactly what I do with a lot of like, well, not a lot of the European cards, like some of the European cards I get or the Asian cards I get, cause I don't follow those leagues, but it's like, all right, let me go to Sora Data, see what this guy is all about. And then it was all of a sudden you were like, oh, all right, this isn't so bad. Oh, I'll take this. It was from the low to the high very quickly.
Yeah, no, it seems every single reward I get, I'm disappointed. I feel like I know more players than I do, because I think what happens with Sora with me is I have like on Flash Score, like notifications on all the teams that I have players in. So they're the teams that I follow and care about. If there's a really high performer in a team that I don't follow, I probably don't even know about them because I'm not like trawling each week to see who the top scorers were. I actually don't research that much anymore because when I'm actively buying, I kind of know who I want to go. It's to compliment players I already have. So like I could get a guy, I remember Nuno Mendes, Buscagli, Gonzalo Ignacio, Tyler Miller, solid players. And every time I was like, oh, do you know? And then I was like, oh, this is actually good. So it's like the most disappointing reward reveals ever. And everyone, I can tell everyone's at home being like, why are you not more excited, you asshole? Am I allowed to curse?
Sure.
We try to stay away from it, but we've already broken the seal, I guess.
Too late. Sorry. Sorry. I'm going to crack open a cold one.
Goalkeepers are a weird reward. Like, I always have this sense of disappointment when I get a goalkeeper, but it's like, hey, goalkeepers are typically a pretty good reward, you know, like... If they're starting, they're guaranteed like a floor price higher than pretty much most field players, I would say.
I got Konstantinos Lampro last week. I finished like 5 or 6 spots ahead of John. And so I was like, I saw the goalie and then I was like, wait a minute, that's pretty similar. I knew Tyler Miller was in tier one because I think it was All-Star D3 we got those cards in. But I knew Tyler Miller was in tier one because I was looking at the tier list. And I have a Tyler Miller already. And I was like, I'm going to win him again. Like, I know this is happening because Andy and I have had like this string of rewards where we get guys that we already have. That happened to me with this past week with Paxton Pomykal. Had his rare card that I way overpaid for months ago and got his limited card, which I actually sold today.
I'm like 99% sure there's a conspiracy here where if you own the card, you're more likely to win it. So I think I'm going to like borrow some Mbappes and Neymars before I open rewards. And I think that that's going to help me.
It's funny that you're like, I'd like to like loan an Mbappe. I don't want it for the game week. I actually want it after the game week and I'll do it back to you before the game week. But just for the reward day, that's what I want.
Yeah, I've only had it once. I had Brendan Aaronson. I got twice. So I think I sold his new card and kept like the rookie, but yeah, that's the only time I think it's happened to me. Could be wrong.
So I'm glad you called that a rookie card because that's part one of the topics we want to talk about today, the kind of collectible aspect of it. And you have this unique, well, maybe it's not that unique to this podcast, at least, point of view of, you know, collecting physical cards and digital cards. And part of your conversation with Quinny, which is the one where I was finally like, all right, we need to get John on this podcast because I need to talk to him about this, was the discussion about Kamavinga and how Quinny gave up a bunch for his rare card. And you were saying that basically in the physical card market, goal scorers are what ends up being the kind of cards that everybody wants. But you preceded that by saying that you got the Kamavinga jersey mint and that you were never going to sell it. And so I wanted to find out which one do you think is more valuable? Like, do you think your jersey mint digital Kamavinga will actually be more valuable than any sort of cardboard Kamavinga?
So I want to preface this whole conversation with, you probably have a bunch of diehard American listeners who have grown up with the hobby and sports cards and whatever else. In Europe, it's very young. Like, it's very young. Particularly, well, we don't follow basketball, baseball, American football. We follow soccer. I'm calling it soccer for that global audience. But, like, it's such a young hobby. It's such a young sort of collectorship that I think the rules are kind of still being established. But I feel like if we're talking about that world exclusively, there's almost like two things. There's definitely a million other things. Nationalities, if you're American, that adds value. There's a lot to it, but I think two of the big things are you're either a hypey player, you're a player that could become the next Ronaldo, the next Messi, the next whoever. You could become amazing. That gives you a lot of value. That gives you a lot of hype. That gives you a lot of like a high price at the time. And then the second one is the kind of vintage, the proven. So like Ronaldo and Messi's cards going for hundreds of thousands. That's like, if Ronaldo breaks his leg tomorrow and never plays again, it doesn't matter to an extent. His card prices will be his card prices because of what he's already achieved. My conversation with Quinny was very much one of, in the short term, I think Kamavinga, it's the same on So Rare price and it's the same on a lot of things. Short term, Kamavinga has a lot of upside. Kamavinga goes to Real Madrid. He actually looks like he slotted in really well. He got a really good all-round score in their Champions League game there that they lost to Sheriff whoever. But like short term, you know, there's that upside when he gets a goal, when he scores a brace, when he scores a really good score, when he gets more established in the team, there's that upside. But I'm kind of coming at it from both angles. I'm kind of shooting myself down, but also bigging up my point. But the fact is, I think long term, if we're actually looking back in 20 years, I mean, what's Tony Kroos's soccer card rookie worth? Next to nothing compared to Ronaldo's. Next to nothing compared to top goal scorers of the game. Goal scorers get the clout, but the kind of counterbalance to that is that it's such a young hobby that maybe over time, these playmakers and iconic players that have all the assists, Kevin De Bruyne is, maybe Trent Alexander-Arnold, maybe these types of players actually do get love long-term, but short-term where the hobby's at the minute. Kamavinga, he's a hype player. He's not a collectible player. even the wife, the Jersey Mint, whatever, and I'd sing that from the rooftops. I realize that in 20 years, the likelihood of Camavinga and his playstyle actually being very collectible are quite low. But I don't know, how does that translate? Have either of you collected cards in any other sport in America? Like, is it predominantly big point scorers in basketball, or do the guys who get lots of blocks and rebounds, I probably sound like a proper noob here, but I am, do they get any sort of clout in American football? Do the defensive players get anything, or is it the scorers?
I think the perfect correlation is a commercial that ESPN ran in the 90s, I think. Chicks dig the long ball. And when you look at baseball, it's the home run hitters that those are the cards that everybody wants, or the really dominant pitchers. But beyond that, it's like, okay, like one of my favorite players growing up, Ozzie Smith, dominant shortstop, great defensive player, but and a Hall of Famer, but his cards aren't worth what, you know, like a Barry Bonds cards are worth, or you know, any other home run hitter. And I would equate home runs to goals.
Yeah, I mean, baseball is definitely the biggest in terms of interest for physical cards. Like basketball and football just aren't as popular, and I think people are trying to make it more popular. What's kind of interesting is, John, you were saying like the European card market is kind of new, but like the soccer card market here in the States is also fairly new. I mean, we've had them for a while. And we had Evaldo on a few podcasts ago where he's sitting on 40,000 physical
soccer. I listened to that like a week ago, yeah.
Yeah, which is just an astonishing number of cards of any sport. But what's interesting is I kind of follow some people who are into the physical card market space, and it's the same thing. It's goal scores. Like it fully applies. People would rather Haaland than Camavinga. Like Casemiro is a great player. Nobody wants
who gives a shit about his rookie. No, right. That's who. Well, like, it's just not collectible.
Well, the other weird thing that we're coming on, and we see it on So Rare now, like we have So Rare actual rookie cards, but we also have like first year So Rare cards. And everyone's like, oh, well, that's so and so's rookie because that's his first card on the platform. But like, if the guy's been there for a few years, like an original year Vanaken card is like, it's not a rookie card. He's been around a while. It's actually one of these things where I call them, they're so rare collectibles. They're not player collectibles or anything like that. Like, I don't think the first year Hans Vanaken card matters as anything more than just like, oh, I love so rare, so I'd like to just get these old so rare things. But like, I just don't think anyone new would be like, let me pay more for that one. Do you guys disagree?
I completely agree.
Black, you probably have one. So like,
so yeah, my perspective kind of is yeah, like somebody that wants one of these things anyways wants a so rare card. Like that's the whole point. Like if I want the thing, I'm into so rare. So if Hans Vanaken is like the cult hero of so rare, then yeah, there's going to be a little bit of desire for that thing. But I get what you're saying, where it's just like they're only important because they're on the platform. They are a platform, quote unquote, platform card is
right.
Kind of what I would call them. And there's a few of those, and Vanaken's a perfect example.
But do you not think that that's a short term thing? Like, so in the now, they aren't that collectible because so rare as I don't even know if IP is the term, but I'm going to go there. Mm-hmm. So rare as a thing isn't that proven. It hasn't been around long enough. But in 5 or 10 years, when so rare goes hand in hand with Panini or Top, so they've died and Fanatics is a new one or whatever happens, and the first NFTs in the soccer space, not that they were, there was like Crypto Strikers or whatever else, there's other ones, but like if Camavinga's first ever NFT was on so rare, it'll be considered the rookie. Do you not think at that stage then maybe there's that little bit more clout? I still don't think there will be for Hans Vanaken because he's a cult hero. He's not a... And maybe there will always be something there from the cult hero-ness of Hans Vanaken. But pick another one. Morioka, pick another high scorer in a lesser-known league. They just aren't collectible long-term, bar to die-hard fans of that club who grew up watching that player and loving them. But even that, you're not going to get hundreds of them. You're going to get a handful. So like... Long term, the collectible players will be collectible. The guys from other leagues who we might love on So Rare won't be. But what I'm getting at is, like, in terms of how collectible a So Rare card is on So Rare, at the minute, that's kind of the case. But I kind of think, whether I'll even be here in 5 years, who knows? But in 5 years, in 10 years, if SoRare becomes an established NFT collectible platform, dominant, that is just known in the sort of footballing world, at the head of fantasy gaming, at that stage, is it like, oh my god, SoRare's been around 10 years? That's from the first year SoRare existed. Imagine having a first year. I know it's completely different because of the timescales we're talking here. But imagine having a first year, the first ever Topps card that was printed in baseball. Like, this is the first ever year Topps existed. Because it's such a recognized product, I don't know how long it takes for SoRare to get there and whether it's even worth us considering, to be honest with you. But it's part of the conversation, I think.
You know, I think the rookie card thing is funny to me, because I consider a first year Juventus Ronaldo a Ronaldo rookie, because the way I see it, the first card a player has on the platform is their rookie card. Is the way my mind works. And you guys probably disagree. I don't know, but that's how I feel.
Definitely your turn, Laird, but let me just say this. I have, like, whenever I'm thinking about players, it's really weird. Like, if I'm talking about Bernd Leno, I'm not saying, oh, that's Bernd Leno's rookie, because no one gives a shit. But if I'm talking about, like, I have a Boubacar Kamara, and I know he's a defender, he's not a goal scorer, he's probably not that collectible, but I have his jersey mint rookie card, and I'll call it a rookie card, not just to pump my own price, but because he's, like, under 23, under 21, it's his first ever so rare card. I doubt the guy's ever had an NFT in his life. So it's kind of like, I don't know where the cutoff comes in my mind, but I wouldn't refer to, I don't even know, like, pick Daniel Parejo, who I have a relationship with. I wouldn't call a card of his rookie, even though I have his rookie jersey mint, but I wouldn't call it that. But I would call Cherky's card, which doesn't have the rookie sort of writing and whatever else, I'd call it a rookie. Do you know? It's a weird one.
Is there like an age cutoff where you decide one's a rookie?
In there is, but not on paper. It's weird. But even with Ronaldo, like, I bought the Ronaldo rookie on purpose. It's not a rookie, but, like, I bought the older card on purpose. I sought it out, and that's why I bought it. I wouldn't have paid the price I did for his newer print. Do you know?
Do you think there's a premium on older cards, but not necessarily first print? Like, I think your conversation with Pires was talking about, I forget who the card was.
Well, a good example would be Osimhen, because he had the cards when he was with Charleroi, and then he had the Lille cards, and now he's got Napoli cards. So
right. So, like, should the Lille cards have extra value because they're older, even though they're not rookies?
I don't know.
Because I don't think so. They will, and Pavel will tell you they will, but they don't. You know, because, I mean, if you look at the real sports card world, it's the rookie or bust. After that,
that's sort of what I was going to bring up. Like, old cards are just old. They're not rookies.
Unless he won a Ballon d'Or that year, was top goal scorer, or it's really significant in Lille's history and a Lille fan will want that card. It's just a second year print. Maybe if there's like three cards printed from his rookie year, or like very few, and those holders are holders, people will automatically go to the next year because it's their first point of access. It's realistic. So it might have a small bit more demand. But maybe it's a unwarranted, a bit of a stupid demand in many ways, because long term, in my mind, it's rookie or bust. Maybe I'm wrong.
One of the things that Quinny was talking about about the Ronaldo cards, where he was saying one of his Juventus cards, they won the title, and another they didn't. He was like, I would obviously like the one that they won the title in, but like, unless you really know Serie A, like, if you need to explain why a card is worth more, then I don't think it's worth more. And if whatever the explanation is, if somebody looks at it and is like, oh, okay, that's a Ronaldo card from a few years ago. And you're like, no, they won the title that year.
I agree 100%. If you have to provide some sort of explanation, and that's why I think that SoRare has a lot of room to grow. They could do something as simple as, like, when you click on the card, and I know that they don't want to be able to like edit the card or anything, but when you click into the card, maybe it does have like a little badge on it that it's like, hey, championship card or championship edition or something like that. I think that there's
champion edition cards.
Yeah, fair enough. But I think there's room there for a little bit of help.
Or even when you list a card to market, kind of like eBay, description, so you can really big up your card and right, explain right. it. But then they're just afraid of people putting foul language in there and saying mean things about people.
That's fair.
Right. If I need four sentences of explaining a card and why I should pay more for it,
it's not collectible.
Yeah.
No.
I'll put my Danny Parejo on the market and be like, hey, John, you prick, buy it.
Okay, we're cursing then, you fuck. So, sorry for your monetization, RotoWire. Yeah. but yeah, no, it's one of those. Like, and it is that, it's that there's that personal collectible level as well. So for me, yes, I think it goes from a historic platform where I used to, I went all in on Danny Parejo and he died. And then he's back and I bought his card on So Rare. And then I literally posted on Twitter, like, I don't know how long, I could tell you exactly how long ago, when did I get his, on the 14th of September, I posted being like, I'm just saying, for a champion midfielder with this good and all-round scoring, he's great value. And the next day, in that La Liga special thing, I won his like, what is it? I don't even know what you call it. The La Liga, what's it?
It's the ticket card?
Game Week 200, no, the Game Week 200 card. Okay. But now for me, because I have his rare, I have that limited, I will buy, I am buying, and I shouldn't be saying this because someone's going to shaft me out of it now, but his ticket card, I'm looking at it, I've sent the guy a couple of more than fair offers, I'm taking into account of the limited card, I'm taking into account a ticket price to the Liga game, I'm giving him more than fair offers, like way above market, and he's saying no. So I'm like, all right, you redeem that card on the 6th of October and I'll hit you on the 7th because the card's worthless then. So I want that card because I've got this little weird fetish for Danny Parejo now. So that's a really isolated, but like I will probably pay, I shouldn't say I'm going to pay over the odds, but I would pay over the odds for that card because I've got this little weird thing, do you know?
This is the
and that's what collectibility is. Yeah.
You're pumping someone else's card before you buy it.
I know. I'm like, don't sell me this because I'm not, I will buy it for more. Like, yeah. Just say no the first three times. I'll still buy it.
Black, you have a Danny Parejo history as well. I specifically remember, I forget what card I, a while ago that I sold, and the guy had, you know, like a decisive the next game, and you were like, oh no, I sold a Danny Parejo, and the day later he scored 100.
Yeah, and I just sold another one that I won, so I'm expecting a 100 here shortly from him.
There you go,
speaking of cards that that you sell and have great games, that guy for Ghent that Montez Court, what is it, Montez?
Castro, yeah.
Yeah, that guy.
Alessio Castro.
He had another decisive action today, just as a heads up.
I sold him like 2 or 3 weeks ago. I was like, I'll never use this guy. And now my challenger team is just dead.
I actually sold that. It kind of comes into collectible, so I'm going to just bring this up and butt right in, because I think it's kind of half relevant. Last night I sold my first ever card I bought, and it was harder than selling any other card, because there was that little bias and that little bit of like, oh, but it's, I remember the night so clearly, do you know? I remember I was in a Zoom call with, I think, Quinny and Hendo, and I was chatting shit on a Zoom call. And I went in and just said, look, let me stick a bid on this guy. And I bid on Zielinski. I didn't even know who Zielinski was. And I put 27 euros on the table and I felt like I was making a big mistake. And I had him. And, you know, he came really good towards the end of last season. And I sold him for a 2,419% fate increase last night. And it's just mad. But, like, even selling him at that, I was like, oh, this is a mistake. Keep him. He's your first. You always remember your first.
I had posted my first. It was a Keaton Parks because I'm a New York City FC supporter. That was the first card I ever bought. And I was like, I put it, like, I was like, I just should just sell this card. I'm not using it enough. Like, I'll just sell it. But then I like see what it's going for. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to be the lowest. If somebody wants to pay me extra for it, I'm like, nobody should pay me extra for this. It's last year's card. Actually, I guess it's a Keaton Parks rookie. I'll say it that way, since he's under 23 and that was the first year of MLS cards. But like, there was no reason. And finally, someone was like, why? This is like the first card that you ever bought and you're selling it for like nothing? And I'm like, you're right. I should just take it off. And now I'm just keeping it. But like nobody, this isn't a collectible card. I'm collecting it because it's my first. But like, there's no value in that.
Yeah.
I don't know. How many players do you think with cards on SoRare will have their cards, I don't even want to say maintain their value, but like be collectible after they retire? But you said if Ronaldo stopped playing today, obviously his cards are going to still be worth it.
If Mbappe stopped playing today, in 20 years we'd talk about Mbappe, but he wouldn't be as collectible in any way. Like, I mean, people would remember, like, do you remember that guy Mbappe that everyone thought was going to be the next Ronaldo?
Oh, what could have been, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Same with Haaland. Same with Fatty's knees are shagged. Who else is a Pedri? I'm trying to think of players that people care about at the minute in terms of collecting football cards. Verts. I mean, there's all these up-and-comers who are like, oh yeah, he's exciting. But like, the bottom line is, Ronaldo and Messi, if they die tomorrow, their price goes up. If they break their leg tomorrow, their price maintains and goes up over time. So like, buying those, I just think it's like, that's why I actually bought the Ronaldo card. I was saying this today in a video. I bought it purely collectively. I did not buy it thinking of SO5. And people won't believe this. I actually didn't even consider the SO5 potential. So much so that whenever it was actually like, oh God, the Prem's back. Jeez, I have Ronaldo. I can actually use Ronaldo. And then there was this, I'll get it. I'll maybe talk about this shortly. I talked about it in a podcast I just recorded, so people will hear it twice from me this week. It's the Diderot effect. It's this weird psychological thing where, like, when you have something that's all beautiful and shiny, you want to surround it by beautiful and shiny things. So then whenever I realized, oh my God, I actually have Ronaldo, an elite SO5 scorer here now, up top for United, I was like, I need to surround that by, like, good players. So I went and bought Insigne, and I bought Courtois, and I've just sold half my gallery to buy, like, Di Lorenzo and Fabian Ruiz, just because I really want a solid champion team now. Because it's like, once you like, I bought him collectively long term, and then I realized what I had from an SO5 perspective, and it was like, geez, I need to actually like utilize that. But back to your initial point, the bottom line is that handful, 10, maybe a few more, I don't know, 1%, 2%, 3% of the cards in this platform will be collectible past the point of retirement. Like, people don't realize that. Like, when I say about Camavinga, I don't think Camavinga is collectible in 20 years. He's collectible now based on the hype, on the potential of what he could become. And maybe I leap my words, but like, if you look at the track record, what's Modric's cards worth? What's Cruz's cards worth? Real Madrid top midfielders for years. Did Modric win a Ballon d'Or? Am I making that up? With Croatia,
he's a finalist.
He was close.
Did he win? I can't imagine they actually let him win.
I don't even know. Like, Steven Gerrard, what are his card prices at? Do you know, Lampard? I'm thinking of, like, midfielders that are, like, revered. It's like, it's just a different thing. But Mbappe has the potential to be very collectible. Haaland has the potential to be very collectible. Ronaldo and Messi are there. Who else? Like,
so, newbie in chat here, who confirmed Modric did win it. 2018, oh. Yeah. So, they said Messi, Ronaldo, Neymar, Lewandowski, Neuer, Mueller, Iniesta. I can't fathom people want an NFT of Andres Iniesta in a Kobe jersey.
I think people do.
I mean, if it was, wouldn't the cards be more expensive now anyway?
I think people want Iniesta in a Kobe jersey more than they want Neuer in a Bayern Munich jersey. Keepers get no love.
Once he retires.
When they announced these Legends cards, and they were like, you can use them in SO5, and it's like, they're going to need some goalies.
So the first thing I thought of when they released the one this morning was, why wouldn't I just buy a Courtois then?
Yeah. Like, to get all the Real Madrid scores?
Price?
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
surely
I don't
he's cheaper.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. What's Courtois? I think his limited was 0.3-ish. And then this guy this morning was, I think you could maybe get him under 0.2.
This guy. Only like one of the greatest keepers ever. This guy.
It's like a 0.1 difference. And I can use Courtois every week. So,
yeah. I don't know. Twice a week sometimes.
Yeah.
You can use Casillas for internationals, right? Oh, no, it's not his international card. I was going to say that some of those Spanish teams were pretty good.
Once a month. Sometimes once a month I can use them.
I love that we're going on, like, people are buying these cards. I haven't bought one. Andy, I know you have one, but like, we have no idea what's going to happen with these cards.
What one did you buy?
I bought Ronaldo.
Ronaldo?
Yeah.
I'd buy a Robbie Keane. Robbie Keane or bust for me. Maybe Roy Keane.
I'll be buying a Cruyff as well.
Don't think so. They're probably not licensed. They wouldn't be licensed, I don't think. Unless it's their official in it. Oh, that's confusing. Have they only found legends that have played for clubs that are licensed, or is it a separate thing?
No, it's a separate thing, I think. I think they've all... I could totally be wrong, but it seems like this is all like one-offs.
Because if there was Roy Keane or Robbie Keane, I'm in.
The Platini one was a France card, and they obviously have that deal. Cannavaro with Juventus. Maybe it is a...
We're going to get Beckenbauer, aren't we?
Was the Ronaldo a Corinthians card?
No, it was PSV.
PSV, yeah, okay. Who was the Corinthians guy?
He played for them. It just wasn't their card.
Okay. Because I know that they mentioned him, I guess, when they made the announcement that Corinthians was coming on board.
Oh, yeah. Yep. John, do you buy so rare cards of cards you own physical versions of?
The reverse. I went through a little weird phase. Do you want to show you my dirty little box on my left shoulder?
No.
you don't want to know what's in here. So, let me
see. I'm excited to find out.
This will be
fun.
I
don't even know. Is this the box? Maybe this.
This is good audio.
Sorry, this is terrible audio. So this pile of cards was cards. Oh fuck! I've dropped one. Sorry for. Oh, I dropped a really nice one. Oh. Anyway, he slipped out. So that's actually a Kalidou Koulibaly, who's one of my best SO5 performers.
Oh, cool.
Look at that signature.
That's cool.
Signed jersey. The corner's gone now, but it wouldn't be worth that much anyway. But like, so these are a bunch of cards that I had some of, and then I went and bought more to fill out my so rare kind of collection. So like, we've got Oblak, Carrasco. I'll wait and see if there's any that jump out. Like, look at this. Like, I would not have this if it wasn't for so rare. You ready? Well, that's a Lord Hans auto.
Yep, it's beautiful.
It's beautiful. Numbered to 99.
What?
99 people were upset when they got that card, but I was buzzing. 98 people were upset. Vlasic. A wee refractor. Cool. Coop Miners. Depay. I'm not going to do this all day, but there's one or two more that are interesting.
These are what you bought individually?
Yeah, I went in a little bit of a binge. Like, this is the funniest one. Like, how uncollectible is this? But I wanted it because I have him. Berghuis in a Watford jersey. Like, who wants that card?
I was
this
totally
guy.
Expecting, like, Sven Kums or someone else.
Oh, here's the story I wanted to bring up. Laird, you bad word.
Here we go.
Remember this guy?
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't focus.
Yeah.
So I
went into All-Star D3 because I have a Don who I bought from John, who was not looking to sell him at all, but he had like a U23 itch and needed a little bit more ETH, and I just happened to have that little bit of ETH.
And you prayed on me.
I was looking at the rewards one on that card, and I opened it yesterday. I was like, man, there are a ton of rewards on this card. And I was like, I don't remember winning all these. And I'm like, oh, right, John won them all.
That's the story. If you go to my gallery on So Rare Data, my best SO5 card, like 3 or 4 months, however long after the transfer, is still a Dan.
No way.
Wow. Still. Yeah, that's I gave so him fun. To you mid-July, so I've had 2.5 months of utility. And you've won 3 rewards with him. I won 11.
It is like, right there. That's so funny.
That guy won me Nuno Mendes, Arthur Fiate, bunch of ETH. Yeah. So that's like the kind of bone I have to pick with you. Like, give me my guy back. Like, his price is through the roof now as well.
I was going to say, if you want to pay double, it's all yours.
Yeah. Ugh.
But you got somebody good from that one. I remember you were buying a bunch of people after that.
I bought a bunch of people after that. I'm actually selling half of them now to try and get back into SO5, but that's just how I do, baby. Anyway.
I was going to say, did you start with So Rare buying cards that you thought were collectibles, or did you focus on SO5? Because it seems like the prices on the market have always been about SO5. Like, there are some guys who maybe are more expensive because they're collectibles, but like, I feel like there's like this base price built into every card because of their SO5 abilities. So like, how did you look at cards when you first started?
SO5 entirely. So Rare Data, when I first signed up, I remember looking at it and I couldn't make head or tails. Hendo was like to me, you need to use this, it's amazing. And I looked at it, there was all these red and
blue and black dots. I was like, what on earth is going on here? But then, like, when I look at my first signings that remain, I'm kind of sad that Zielinski isn't there. I mean, I had Bodart, Koulibaly, Diata, Trippier, Nuble. I got him for €77, Amiri. I mean, Amiri isn't exactly great, but at the time he was a bit of a baller. He scored a few good goals. But then very quickly I got a bit of an itch for it, and I bought the likes of Vanaken, Jacob Rasmussen on the Eredivisie release, who's went a bit downhill with an injury. Nemecha, who was big, Berghuis, Sergio Oliveira, Noah Lang, Coop Miners. I went big on SO5 is basically what I'm getting at here. And then I kind of transitioned from SO5 maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago. I got a bit of a horn for under-23s. That sounds creepier than it is. But I kind of decided, like, I'm going to buy people who have more upside, people for the future, but high performers. The issue and the thing that I didn't really think about too much, it's a great long-term idea and it's a great immediately short-term idea. It's a terrible mid-term idea because Coop Miners goes off to Atalanta and you can't use him anymore. Nuno Mendes goes to PSG, which I think will be great, actually pretty short-term, but even just now there's a rotation risk. Arthur Thiatte goes away, Zinho van Huijsden goes away. A bunch of players go to teams that they aren't nailed. Crep and Diata, the worst story ever. Do you know, he was an elite performer at Bruce. He was the first big card I bought. Yep. He was the first, like, he was the biggest money I'd paid for a card at that date. And he went to Monaco and just, he's getting a few goals recently, I think, or maybe one or two, but, like, just fell off a cliff. And that became the issue. Pre-summer, I was under-23s. Post-summer, bunch of transfers. I go to build SO5 lineups, and I have a bunch of cracking scores that remain, but there's holes everywhere. And those holes are the guys that got transfers. So now I'm like, I need to fill those gaps. So I need to sell some of the guys. I'm not selling the really elite ones or the ones who got top transfers, because they are obviously really well-renowned and sort of, they will go on to become great players, I'm sure. But the kind of like longer-term prospects, I'm like, this is dead wood. I could sell them, get players, and win 10 of them in the meantime. It's like, I think economically it makes more sense to have the SO5 performer over the second tier potential guy. Do you know what I mean? Like, elite potential, proper top players who could go on to big clubs and do great things, that's one thing. But guys who are kind of like a bit of a punty one for like 2 or 3 years' time, percentage-wise, I think you're just better going SO5, but maybe I'm wrong.
I think a lot of those elite, like U23 players are massive risks. And we saw that in J League with, was it Tanaka that went to Bundesliga 2?
Yeah.
I think there were a few other guys that ended up transferring as well. But that's kind of the risk that you play. And we see it in the MLS too. We have really good U23 players in the MLS. And, you know, Brendan Aronson went to a uncovered league. There's always that risk of your player going to a more difficult league in a transfer window and either them becoming kind of a dead card, or just less elite.
Yeah. I think that you need guys who are very good, but not too good that they leave. Mm.
And we always talk about those guys like privately, like, hey, is he too good though? Is he going to make that move to the next league or whatever and then die? And those are the guys you kind of don't want. Like, Chris Mueller is going to be interesting because I thought that he was, you know, going to crush MLS this year. And then they announced that transfer and he sucked ever since they announced that transfer. But I don't know. When he goes to Belgium, is he going to crush that league? I don't know. He might be just fine. But Jordan Morris is like another guy. He's not U23, but he was a card that I invested in because I thought he wasn't good enough to play in Europe. I thought he would just crush MLS for the rest of his career, and that was a super rare I invested heavily in. And then he went to Swansea City, blew out his ACL, back in Seattle now. I don't know. Maybe he'll stay and MLS the rest of his career. We'll see.
Mm. Yeah, I feel like that was my, when I was starting to get into the J League and K League, and it was like, don't get the really, really good young guys because they'll leave and you just have no idea like what happens when they leave. So if you get the guys who are like 27, 28, that's probably old enough where they're like, they're probably just staying. And so just go after
those
guys.
They got a family
guys.
Now. They got to stay. They got kids.
Totally.
They can't move them all.
But yeah, the fear, like, you obviously want your U23s to play exceptionally well because they have to help your lineups. But then all of a sudden, like this summer, the Noah Lang Leeds rumors. And as somebody who didn't have a Noah Lang card, I'm like, yeah, go to Leeds. Do it. Because then I can stop worrying about getting slaughtered by Noah Lang lineups in U23.
I have Noah Lang, right? And I think, like, he's the one. I was actually about to bring him up. It's funny you brought him up. I was about to say, like, he's my heart attack for next summer. And I'm kind of thinking, like, I have De Ketelaere, I have Vanecken. I'm like, I love having that as a stack, albeit I normally separate Vanecken for the under 23 bit. But the point is that, like, I know that the time will come where Charles De Ketelaere and Lang are split up. The chances are one of them becomes a bit of a dud. I don't know which one. But even in terms of leads, so, like, what is the point to sell? Do I sell now? Or do I play the January transfer window thing? They're both doing great in the Champions League. Teams are looking. Do I hope they ride that out the next summer? And do I sell in like February or March when prices are starting to taper off? Everyone's buying MLS and getting worried. Bruges aren't in the Champions League anymore. Whatever else. But my big thing was, like, the Leeds rumour scared me, but it didn't terrify me. I probably should have. Maybe I'm naive. But if you look up like some Leeds players, like if you go to Leeds United on So Rare Data, the forwards aren't the worst scorers in the world. It's not Noah Lang levels. His price would definitely have dipped. But I mean, like, if he could do something like what Rafinha does, like, I'd love Rafinha. You look at his scores, they're great. Leeds are one of those Bielsa sort of Bielsa ball, all-out attack. They'll concede goals. Lang doesn't give a shit about conceded goals, but he'll score goals at Leeds, albeit their season hasn't had a great start. But I think long-term, they're pretty solid in the Prem. And imagine they got relegated. Imagine how good that would be. They won't. They're not that bad, but imagine.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
That's the dream. But anyway, yeah, the Leeds rumours, at first it was like heart attack, and I think I listed him, and then I was like, wait there, calm down, big lad. Do you know, it's not the end of the world. Where I've got some players there, like Nemecha, who's like off the face of the earth now, getting sort of 20 minutes a game. I think he'll come good at Wolfsburg. They get goals as well. But there's so many players I have who just like were Lang-type prices. Not Nemecha was, but Koopmeiners was. And it's now just a case of like, all right, let's wait, do you know? Because I'm not selling them for 0.3, like, no way.
Right. I'd imagine if CDK and Lang stay at Bruges through the winter, you're gonna be free rolling on them by next summer.
Mm.
You'll have won enough.
And that's a nice way to look at it.
Yeah.
That's why you need to look at it, probably.
Yeah.
Did you consider selling Koopmeiners when he moved? Like, I feel like there's this excitement when moves first happen, and like before people are like, wait a minute, in the short term this is probably horrible,
right?
But long term maybe it's okay. But I think that time is literally like a day or two. But if that first day where all of a sudden it's like, oh, he might go to Atalanta, and somebody's like, oh, they score a lot of goals, maybe I'll get him, but you didn't think of it.
No, I think the thing was, it's like it's kind of scared me off buying more of these like under 23 elite performers who aren't already at their forever club or a similar level of their forever club. Like Osimhen, where's he going to go? He's going to go to a club of a similar level or slightly higher where he's still likely to perform, in my opinion. Whereas you buy Lang, he goes to any of the top five leagues in Europe, he might just not step up. With Koopmeiners, the question you asked me, the thing was, it's like when you buy those players, that's the risk you take. And I think, like, if you're buying those players and you're selling them whenever they get the transfer out of panic, you're just playing it wrong. I think you kind of need to, like, you're buying them for the long term. That's why you're buying them. And while I've realized recently there's holes in that plan, because those holes are holes in my SO5 teams, I'm not selling them at cut price, because the reason I seen them initially and the reason I wanted them initially is because they have high upside in terms of like peak SO5 scores. They just need to bet in, get game time. If Koopmeiners was playing every game for Atlanta, and in a couple of years if he's on set pieces, he is a top scorer on the platform. And you know, Atlanta has seen enough of him to sign him. His scores speak for themselves. He was he was a big fish in a small pond whenever he was in the Eredivisie. But like, there's players like that that it's like, I back him to succeed. I really do. There's some of them who take the step up and you're kind of like, oh God, do you know, like, maybe I should have sold him. But I think the bottom line for me is, if you're buying young quality, you need to be aware that the transfer is imminent. And if you aren't willing to back them long term, you probably shouldn't have them, because the transfer is going to come out of nowhere and it's going to happen. Do you know? Yeah. I'm kind of going around in circles, but I think you get what I mean.
Do you put like an estimated time frame on these guys in terms of like when you would sell? Like, you're obviously, it seems like the plan is not to hold them forever. But like, what is the, when do you get out?
You never get out. You literally never get out. And that's the horrible part, because now I'm thinking, like, I'm looking there of like a Doku of a Cherky rookie, right, in inverted commas. And when you ask me that question, that's who I look at. And I'm thinking, like, what's the end game with Cherky? All right. So Cherky gets into the Lyon team eventually, and he actually plays. I mean, I think he made a bit of a cameo tonight, and people were impressed with how direct he was. I think he pretty much created the second goal. Don't know if he got the assist because it was a deflection. But the bottom line is, the sky is the limit. But what's more likely is Ravel Morrison, or just some sort of standard-ish kind of okay career playing for Aston Villa. Do you know what I mean? That's what's more likely. That's 80% what's going to happen, 90% what's going to happen. But there's a 5 or 10% chance there that Cherky goes on to become the next big thing. So when is the end game? Jeez, I don't know. I mean, I think for a smart person, the end game should be whenever there's hype, whenever he does something, whenever he gets a call up to the French squad, whenever he gets regular game time and scores a hat-trick, that should probably be your exit. But realistically, will I have the discipline to do that? Probably not. When will actually be my exit? Probably like 4 years away from now, when I decide to leave So Rare because I have to buy a house or something. And then it's like, I don't know. I don't know. And that's my honest answer. It's something that I probably need to consider more and need to be more disciplined in. Because the issue is, the hard part is, whenever they start scoring well on SO5, that's when their price goes up. But they're scoring well on SO5, so you want to keep them.
Right.
That's the killer.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yeah, your whole description right there, if you just replace it with Joao Felix, that's how I feel about that card that I bought.
Like,
I know you have one too. Joao Felix is like the first expensive card I bought on So Rare, to the point where I was like, what am I doing? Like, why am I spending hundreds of dollars for a card? And I remember, because I thought I could sell it for hundreds of dollars plus 50. And I was like, if I can make 50 bucks on this card, like, that's great. I still have the card. It's been months. I turned down.
Gary V will be back.
I could have, right. He was selling for 5 ETH. He is not selling for that anymore. I think I saw a 0.5 something today, which was just like the most depressing tweet I've seen in a long time. Mm. But that's like, I was thinking, like, my end game, I think the only way that somebody like Joao Felix is valuable long-term is if he becomes like literally a top 3 player in the world. And the odds of that happening are so low that I really should sell when he's under 23. And I think that applies to like almost every U23 player, that they have peak value before they turn 24. And even if they're great players, like I struggle to see Noah Lang being this expensive when he's 26. Even if he's a very good player, like in terms of so rare, like the utility goes down because you can't use him in U23. Like there's just not that many players that we pay premiums for when we can't play them in U23. So like, obviously looking back, I should have sold Joao Felix, and he doesn't play now. So like his value is still low now, but like, it feels like elite U23 players peak, like their values peak now, when they're U23s, because I mean, obviously, you can win stuff with them, but
they can win you the best players on the platform or the most expensive players on the platform right now. That's why, right?
What am I trying to say here? I used to prioritize under 23s, as in that was always when I did my wee lineup builder, whatever's on YouTube, under 23s. I'll build my D3, I'll build my D4, and then we move on. But in the last like 2 weeks since PSG have been added, I'm building a champion D3, champion D4, and then going under 23s. Maybe I'm just wrong.
You're a madman.
It's the thought. I know champions, so it's so competitive.
So hard.
It's so competitive. But the thought of like winning a Messi or a Neymar or a, I suppose, to be fair, Hakimi, Donnarumma and Mbappe are all probably in the under 23s. So maybe I am just being a dick. But that's where I'm at.
You can win U23s in the regional ones.
Sure. You can win them in both.
Yeah.
But I hear what you're saying. The prizes in Champion Europe are just so damn good. And I do prioritize there, but I don't use any U23 players in, maybe Alphonso Davies in Champion Europe. But for the most part, all of my Champion Europe players are over 23.
I'm just checking. I think mine might be. So it's a bit of a pointless task anyway. Melvin Bard is one who I've used in D3. He's actually became a really consistent sort of scorer. Sounds stupid. Everyone's like, who the hell's Melvin Bard? You have no chance. But he's actually scoring like four of his last five scores.
Does he still play for Lyon, or did he get transferred?
No, he's off to Nice. But Nice are looking really good defensively.
The platform is filled with guys like that, though. Yeah. That like we all know. And then you mention a name to somebody who doesn't play so rare, and they're like, who the hell is that guy?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, it's nobody. It's just somebody I just spent $2,000 on.
Literally.
A card for. That's all.
Literally.
Yeah. do you view cards in fiat?
When it suits me. To be honest, yeah. No, it's ETH, but I mean, if ETH's very, very volatile and I'm buying. Oh god, my head can't process now. If it suits me to value it in ETH, I'll value, or if it suits me to value it in fiat, I will. Like, if his last sale in fiat was $2,000 and ETH spikes and all of a sudden someone wants $3,000, I'll be like, well no, he actually sold for this, this is what he's actually worth. But if I'm selling, I'll play the other card. I'll definitely go the other way. So I'm a bit of a scumbag, but I think we all are.
I pretty much only think in ETH, except when I sell dirt cheap limited cards that I don't want anymore. I just don't want to look at them. And so I get an offer and I'm like, it looks so low. And it's like $12. And I'm like, okay, whatever. That's fine. $12 is nothing.
It's a tier 3 Asian that I'll never use. $12, sure. Limited.
That's all I win now. Tier 3 limited cards. That's it. I can't place anything for a rare card. But yeah, I'll happily give up the $12 or take the $12. Mel posted something or tweeted the other day about buying a PlayStation, and she was saying how expensive it was. And she was like, I couldn't believe I'd ever pay this much for it. And she's like, and then I realized it was 0.28 ETH. And I was like, oh, that's okay. I'll pay
that. That's
funny. That's exactly yeah, how
it That's was. Pretty funny.
It was so funny.
I've already had this because I moved from, so in the north of Ireland, they think in pounds and miles. And in the south of Ireland, where I live now, we think in euros and kilometers. And there's lots of other things there. And now I think in ETH. So it's really hard. I think everyone has their own little matrix in their head of how they think about things. Like, sometimes when I go home, I price things in like pints, or like, that's like two lunches, or that's like, do you know, like in really weird things.
I'll tell you what, Nellis, the thing that drives me absolutely nuts is when somebody reaches out to me on Discord and they're like, hey, I want to buy this guy for, you know, 400 euros. Dude, I don't know what a euro is.
What is a euro?
I don't know what the hell a euro is, and then I don't know how to compare that to a...
It's like 1.1 pounds. That's what it is, Black.
It's like,
which is 4,000 yen.
Yeah, you know? I had a guy today, and I was like, just tell me what that is in ETH. I don't know what that is, but that's at least like a universal language that we can speak.
Yeah. That's the importance of it, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it would be nice for everybody just to work on the same terms.
But I think like that's probably... This is something I thought about like yesterday when I was driving. I was thinking about how, you know, it's taken so... It really pissed me off. I don't think I've ever bought a card unless it's in a panic or a hurry because I think I've got news. I don't think I've ever bought a card without Discording the person first. It's like, if you don't have Discord, I'm going to talk to the other guy and get his price lower than yours. So there's no point in me talking to you. Maybe I'll send an offer if the other guy's not playing ball and we'll see what happens. But bottom line is, Discord or bust. I've said that twice, that kind of or bust thing this podcast, but it's relevant. So I was thinking about their counter offer system that's going to happen someday. And I was thinking like, probably not necessarily what's taking them. There's no reason for this to take long, but I imagine how it works that you can't send abuse is a bunch of predetermined phrases of meet me in the middle or like can you come down a little bit or some sort of shit. But the beauty of it is that it'll be so, if there's 10 set phrases or whatever,
yeah,
they can translate them to 50 languages. And I can say to some random guy in the Czechoslovakia, I can be like, here, meet me in the middle. And I can click that button, but he sees it as meet me in the middle, or whatever. That's not an accent, whatever that is. You know what I'm doing, and you know, and we both speak the same language. That's so rare, baby. Do you know?
I love it. It's a global game, right?
Global game, right there.
I had somebody offer to PayPal me euros recently, and I was like, I don't even know if I can do that. So please don't suggest.
That sounds like a scam. Was it? Were they going to use Western Union and did you have to like clear a check first, or yeah, how was that going to work?
They were just going to mail me some cash, and I would mail it. So I would print out the card and mail it back to them, and then somehow.
Oh boy, here we go. Take a picture of it.
Right.
Did it involve iTunes gift cards?
Is that a real? That's. Do you know the way like tax is an issue with NFTs?
Oh,
is there a way that someone who lives in, we're not going to get deep into this, Jay Fraz, who I recommend you follow, he's a good guy, he posted this question to me recently, like yesterday, and I talked, Hendo's your guy for this, he's a tax man,
mm-hmm,
but is there a case to be made for setting up a company in like Malta or somewhere weird that has no NFT tax, getting everyone to send you their NFTs, selling them and sending them back cash? How do you get the cash to them without customs find it? I shouldn't talk about illegal activity like this on live streams, should I? Anyway, someone's going to do that in a year.
I don't think anybody knows if that's illegal or not. Shipping cash is probably not a good thing, but you know.
There's probably like a limit of like 10 grand. But I'm not going down that line. I'm not going to derail this conversation. I do that in my own podcast.
John, so you do collectible cards or physical cards and so rare cards. Do you do any other NFTs?
No. I've been very close a couple of times, but it's laziness. It's kind of like, there's a couple of things. Like, I think, being completely honest, and I say this all the time, whenever you're like a content creator, like whenever you're making content, there's like, I get double value out of what I do. So I get the value of So Rare and I get the value of what I can do with that to create content. If I was to like take out of So Rare and put it elsewhere, yes, you might find a ape yacht club jobby, or you might find a CryptoPunks. I wish I'd done that. But anyway, the thing is, whenever you're like, they're bad examples because everyone would prefer that. But like, if I go and buy some dodgy dog avatar thing that may or may not go anywhere, if I put that money in So Rare, I can create more engaging content to make better podcasts, to make more engaging YouTube videos, which I hope whenever this prod, we're all back in So Rare to succeed. If it goes FPL, if it goes half of FPL, I have a good job, but I would love, imagine being able to just talk about football for your life. Do you know, I want to create the best content I can create, and how do I do that? Buying more So Rare cards. So that's why I put my money there. But I do 100% encourage diversification among NFT platforms, not just players and So Rare, because you never know what's going to happen. But I'm kind of double backing it with content, which you kind of are as well, I think.
I have no interest in other NFTs.
Neither do I. I mean, if there's something that comes out that I find interesting, like I do genuinely find this Genuino stuff interesting. They're kind of hitting, they hit me, they've hit a few other people, but the kind of jersey, the memorabilia, the real life, the football, the tangibles, the this, the that, meh, do you know, I kind of find that interesting. I like the physical, the digital connection, which is what So Rare's doing. It's in football, something I love. If they open up to more clubs that I prefer, Fiorentina, if they were on So Rare, maybe I'd care more. But like, if they bring on more clubs, I mean, there will be NFTs I'm sure that I'm interested in. But avatar NFTs at the minute just aren't really for me. But maybe one day. I say that today, and tomorrow you'll see me with some alien as my profile picture. But
yeah, I'm not there. The thing that got me, like, I've had people kind of reach out and be like, you know, that we have this new project. Do you want to be involved? And I was like, okay, like, what is the deal? And they're like, eh, they're NFTs, so you just buy them. I'm like, well, what do I do with them then? And they're like, no, you just, you own them.
Buy them.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's not enough for me at this point. Like this, the fantasy SO5, like, keeps me involved in So Rare. Like, I'm not buying.
I'll be completely honest. I think all of the NFT stuff involving avatars and art, I think personally is a fad that will fade away. And the people holding a lot of these things that they think are valuable right now are not valuable, and they will not be able to sell them for what they think they are worth right now down the road. Granted, there's a lot of people making a lot of money right now flipping these things and you know, selling their quote-unquote bags, but I think that there's going to be a lot of people that end up with things that are not valuable in the end.
Is that greater fool theory? Is that like
a bit, yes,
everyone buying it hoping the next guy's stupider? Yeah. I think, like, I personally, my personal belief would be that I do think CryptoPunks, these Bored Ape Yacht Club things, and a few other significant ones that have cultural significance, and actually they have that clout based on what they've done early in the NFT era and whatever else, I do think long term they'll have value. Will they have millions of value? I don't know. Maybe, probably, but I do think it's one of those where 99% of those avatar projects are just fads. I do think that. But I do think there will be the 1% or 2% that are actually just like status symbols on Twitter, and you'll have the little Ethereum verified thing beside your NFT profile picture. I think that's coming. I believe that. But I don't believe in it enough to go and buy a bunch of random new ones and hope I hit the next big one. I would rather stick to what I know. But there's going to be a lot of people make a lot of money. There's going to be a lot of people who lose a lot of money.
I mean, for a lot of people to make a lot of money, a lot of people have to lose a lot of money.
Well, there we go. Literally, there we go.
Just everybody remember that.
Yeah.
But like, we're going to be like that in So Rare. Like, if So Rare is around in 10 years, we have a lot of cards right now of guys who will probably not be playing in 10 years. And like,
yeah,
and they're not collectible cards or collectible players. So, like, what do we do with them then?
We hold on to them and we cherish them, Laird.
Yeah. See those cards on my shoulder? I like these. See, in that box, they're my favorite ones. If anyone's planning on robbing my house. See, in, like, this box and, like, below, they're a bunch of shitters that no one cares about and no one will ever care about. That's what half of my So Rare cards are going to be.
Yeah.
It'll be a case of milk them to the day they die. Retire. Hopefully not die.
And that stage is just... Hopefully you win some stuff that you can keep using and win more stuff that down the road goes into that bin over there.
Exactly. And the only thing that makes this not Ponzi is these real-world experiences. The Ethereum prizes, obviously, but the real-world experiences, and that's a big thing that I think So Rare long-term, for value the cards, they need to really double down on.
winning a bit of Ethereum if your podium's grand, okay? Look, that's actually brilliant. Everyone wants to win a couple of grand. Everyone wants to win a few hundred quid. But I think long term, for SoRare to be sustainable and not actually be Ponzi, they really need to have real world experiences. Do you?
Yeah, I mean, baseball cards aren't a Ponzi, right? Or soccer cards aren't a Ponzi.
But people actually buy those to make money. People act like they're collectors,
yeah.
But they're all sharks. Maybe SoRare can do the same thing. But I think if you take out the Ethereum and you take out the real world experiences, we're all just buying cards to win more cards, to win more cards, to win more cards.
But that's entertainment.
To sell cards. Entertainment has value. That's fair. I just don't think I wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
Would I be here? Jeez, would I be here?
I would be. I think it's fun as hell, the whole fantasy aspect of it. But
do you not think it eventually just crumbles if there's nothing tangible to actually play for and we're just buying cards to win cards to win cards?
Because they're before, right?
So the difference is just that the fact that if there was no ETH involved?
No ETH or physical. I think the physical experience is something that can't be understated.
Yeah, I agree. These cards. There needs to be monetary rewards as well.
Yeah.
That has to exist.
That's what I'm saying.
Granted, I love the fact that they're bringing in La Liga and real world experiences, and I am all for more of that. And I think that they should. And if they can do sponsorships, like maybe Champion Europe D4 is sponsored by Pepsi this week or something, and that's another way to generate revenue or provide experiences to users, then I'm all for it. I think that's stuff that they should look at.
That's what I'm saying. ETH and those. I'm not saying those. It could just be ETH. But I'm saying there needs to be something more than cards. If it's buying cards to win cards to win cards to play cards to win cards to buy cards, it's just stupid. And I don't think I don't think it has a future to a point.
Yeah.
You need the ETH. You need things that people can use outside cards. But I don't think that's a worry. I don't even know why I brought that up. I'm getting twisted because I've had a few beers.
What if you could take your card and burn it, and they send you a card?
Say again? Come again?
What if you take your card, you send it to SoRare or whatever, they burn it, and then they send you a physical card of that card? That moved the needle to you?
Lack of utility, baby. Well, here, do you know what I should do? It'll be like, you know, like YouTubers who like burn like $5,000 just for the like outrage views. I might just like burn my Ronaldo. Send it to some burn wallet just for the YouTube views.
It's 0x000 repeating.
Yeah.
So now you know.
Don't do that. that's my advice. Don't do that.
Nervous laughter.
But did you, I mean, when you joined, we obviously didn't have any of these physical prizes, like the tickets or anything. That obviously is very new. Did you expect that to be added, or were just the ETH threshold enough for you?
No, I very much knew that was coming. I think like when I signed up, it would have been like, obviously, I don't even know if the threshold existed a year ago. Maybe it came in a little after that. Anyway, when I first signed up, it was more for something to do. And then as I started to understand the platform, when I got very bullish is when I thought about the long-term future of SoRare. And I think that the physical aspect, which Nicholas has doubled down on and mentioned loads of times, Discords and stuff back whenever it was in February, whenever there was the Gary V boom, talking about, he was constantly rehashing, re-bringing it up, constantly doubling down on the physical and digital sort of relationship. So ever since February, I've been constantly talking about that. That's 7 months ago, which is actually kind of frightening, talking about it, because I do just think, like, you know, whatever, like the nerds and whoever else can work out actual values on cards based on SO5 performance. I know there's a lot in SoRare because it's where you play them, how you play them, and who you play them with. But like there is an actual finite kind of value on things. Now collectability plays on that. But I think whenever you bring into the mix down the line, who knows if this is possible or whatever. But I've had it thrown at me as an example in a Discord call by a SoRare team member. What if you got a 15-minute call with Messi on Zoom and that was the reward? Like, to loads of people who are like, I don't give a fuck, it's just a guy. What would I even say to him?
Loads of people don't care about that. But the people who do care about that will sell their house. Do you know? People who do care about that care about that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the bidding war comes in. That's where the competitive side of it comes in. So I think, like, with the physical side, the upside of what you can actually give away, the value on it is it's a beauty in the eye of the beholder. And based on that, the value can be so much higher than they can ever actually feasibly give away in ETH. So when you play on that, I think the physical side of things can really bring the platform to that next level. But maybe I'm talking crap, lads. Do you know? That's just how I view it. I think, like, being able to give Joe Bloggs, who sticks 200 quid into SoRare and buys a bunch of limited cards, sticks 500 quid in probably now, and he enters a special weekly and wins an all-expenses-paid trip for him and three mates to the World Cup final. Giving someone that shot is worth so much. Do you know? And I just think that drives the platform to, like, crazy levels. But there's a lot more to it. Do you know what I mean? I think those experiences are worth so much. More than would ever be given an ETH prize.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I'm wrong. Unless you win a killing Mbappe, it's not worth more than that. Let's be honest.
You did go all out for that El Clasico. That, like, story pains me. Obviously not as much as you, looking at your reaction there, but man, that, like, I had a lineup and I was like, oh, I'm not going to win. And I saw yours and I was like, oh, like, I was sweating your lineup more than mine.
Yeah, like, I was like, what, like 40 points or 50 points off winning with Leno, who got benched in an Arsenal clean sheet.
I got a little secret. I had you beat John.
Did you?
With a DNP goalkeeper as well.
Oh, yeah. I think I heard you talk about this. And yeah. I remember, like, I heard that podcast and I was like, it's not just me.
Yeah. Like,
imagine we'd come first and second.
That would have been fun.
Yeah. Yeah. You would have had to take me.
Yeah, I'd take you on a date, man. My wife would have killed me, man.
I'm sorry, I have to take this Irish guy because?
Yeah.
He seems like a really nice guy, so I'll let you know.
I don't actually know him, but we kind of know each other. I listen to his podcast.
Yeah.
And he listens to mine. Full circle, I love it.
Yeah, we're buds.
Do you know, you've actually, sorry, I know you're...
Oh, sorry.
I know you were about to, like, bring it on there and probably wrap it up, but, like, bottom line is you, like, broke my mind. I'm, like, questioning everything I believe because I've preached for so long that I always think, like, the ETH and the real-world experiences, things that are more tangible than just cards, are what brings the value and drives the value and makes this platform able to exist. I've never considered the thought of... I'm not saying ETH's going anywhere and the real-world experience... It's actually, like, just a completely hypothetical conversation because... They're so bullish on particularly the real world physical stuff and also the ETH, as we've been told it's here to stay with the progress bar. So it's all hypothetical. But even just like if I take those out of my mind and think about that, it kind of breaks my mind to think like, would I still be on SoRare if the only thing I could win was cards and the only thing I could win after that's cards? Because the entertainment value is worth something, but how much is that worth? It's not worth 100 grand.
Yeah.
I think that's my answer.
But time-wise, I mean... You do a bunch of FPL stuff. Obviously, the monetary investment in there is smaller, but like you want to spend your time doing it, and you want to spend your time doing so.
I'm nowhere near as passionate about FPL anymore.
Oh, okay.
I still play FPL. I enjoy FPL. I make content in FPL, but like nowhere near as much as SoRare because I haven't as much riding on it. I have a few mini leagues where I've people stick 20 quid in a head and stuff. Mm-hmm. There's bragging rights. I get it, shooting for that overall rank's exciting, but like in terms of if I had to like kill one and keep the other, SoRare is where it's at because of the adrenaline, because of the thrill of the chase.
Because you're going to sell one Cherky card for your new house.
That's it. One day. Give it 5 years.
You don't have to sell all of them. Just one.
Just one.
That's
just
all. Just one.
Real quick, we got a couple of Twitter questions I wanted to hit real quick. And one of them is kind of funny because somebody in chat mentioned Jared Bowen getting a decisive off the bench for West Ham. But also, we had a Twitter question regarding one of the Jared Bowen cards on SoRare has a blotch like right here on his jersey. It's just like a little colorful blotch. And he was curious that it's right above the Umbro logo. Does that provide additional collectability for that card?
It's like, yeah, like an error card.
It's one card has a blotch. It's like a mustard stain right above the Umbro logo.
I'm hunting for it.
Yeah, you'll find it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
There's only one of them.
That's crazy that there's only one.
I haven't seen it on my first try. Let me try again. This is getting embarrassing. So on the left-hand side, is it a rare card, I assume?
Yeah. Yes.
Let me see if I can...
If you find it, tell me the number, because I'm hunting.
It's 2 of 100 for the 1920. Let me see if I could just pull it up on the screen here.
I've got it here. I'm not... Is that my screen or is that his chest?
That's what everybody says.
That's the tiniest blotch. Get out of here if you think that's more collectible.
Really?
Okay, it probably is more collectible. Like, if you had to pick one, would you have it or would you have it the one? I'd have the one of 100 over that personally, but maybe I'm wrong.
I wonder, how does that happen? How did this happen?
That goes back to exactly what we were talking about. Like, Jared Bowen is not a superstar. So why do you want the one of 100 of some guy for West Ham?
Oh.
Here we go.
He's just a guy. Go.
Because it's more valuable than the 5 of 100. I don't know.
But is it more valuable than the 5 of 100 in 10 years?
Marginally.
Because one is worth 40 cents.
One's worth $10 and one's worth 12.
Right, so exactly.
But the blotch, who spotted that?
The guy that owns it.
How does the blotch happen at 2 of 100 and not 1 of 100 or 3 of 100?
Great question.
Are there creeps who sit and scan every card that's put on the market for errors every single day?
There are plenty of errors. Like, there was...
The Juventus logo is one.
My favorite is the Paxton Pomykal, where they printed just another kid's face.
Just another guy, yeah.
like a 15-year-old kid.
They did that with Alex Roldan. They did an entire season of his brother on his card.
Yeah.
Was there one in the other day with no player on it? Just the name.
Somebody sent that in one of the Discords I'm in. I didn't know if it was actually real.
Yeah.
It's probably due for auction soon.
The other one, the Freeze Matthew and Matt Freeze thing.
Yeah.
They printed his last name first for the entire season.
For an entire season. What's the Juventus one? Somebody messed up the Juventus logo?
Oh, so instead of being white, it was black. YNWA has at least one of them. He always talks about it.
So my answer to this question is, anything that you can do to tell a story, to make someone else think that your thing is worth more than it is, makes it more collectible. If you can get them to believe you, then you've done a great job. It's selling your booger mustard blotch on Jared Bowen's shirt, and it's more collectible now.
I was going to say, this goes back to, like, if you need to explain to me why a card is more valuable, then it's not. But in that situation, all you have to be like, there's a blotch on it.
Charisma.
And be like, oh, okay.
Charisma is worth something in this situation. Spin a narrative. Convince some sucker.
That's right.
Yeah.
Another question that we had is, do you have a card, and this is from Rascal Masaki. I'm very curious if any of you gentlemen have cards that, and calling us gentlemen is very kind of this
stretch.
Person. Yep. Have cards that might not be collectible to the rest of the market, but have much more value to you personally. Has won a lot of rewards as a player that has specific meaning to you because of real life performances. Either of you guys?
No, honestly, the one, like, I thought Zielinski, maybe because he was my first card, but I sold him. But genuinely, one that will, I mean it, he will rot in this guy, he will rot in my club. If I leave SoRare, he stays. Danny Parejo's Game Week 200 card is the only one at the minute. That's my one. No one's ever buying that. And I challenge someone, offer me 10 ETH for it and I'll reject it.
Can't wait.
No one has the balls to do it.
I want to see a screenshot of this.
No one trusts me. Offer me 10 ETH, one of you big hitters, for Danny Parejo, and I will reject it. That'll be a story.
That's the content that you can live stream that whole thing. I would watch the heck out of that.
Yeah, there we go. That's my one. I've either you got one.
Job, I don't think I have one. I think I would happily sell anything. Like I just I didn't buy these for sentimental reasons. Like I don't have anything that I haven't been successful enough where one card is one of the cards that I won Global All-Star D4 in. Someone was like, oh, you have to, you know, make that team your Hall of Fame, and like that's special. You can never sell those cards. And I sold one of them like the next week, and I had to update my Hall of Fame. Didn't care.
I've got a bunch of these cards that fall into this category for me. I've got a Sven Coombs.
They've all got penis in the name or like sexual innuendos.
That's exactly what it is.
Sven Coombs, 69 Mint is a great card.
That's a great card, actually.
Bruno Fux is a great card. plays for CSKA. But my Holy Grail card. This is my Holy Grail card. I have the 2020. And in fact, if you go on my gallery, this is like one of the first cards that I ever bought. And it was because of Jimmer was like, hey, man, if you're going to want to play So Rare, you're going to have to buy one of these cards that's actually pretty decent. Because I was buying a bunch of scum. And so he's like, buy this Vanaken guy. He's pretty good. And I was like, all right. So I went out and I bought him for like a very little.
$20. 21 euros. 21 euros.
But listen, it gets better. That's a 2020 card.
That's a 20. And
it's the Jersey Mint, which is 20. So 20, 20, 20, Jersey Mint. Guess how many rewards I've won with this card?
20.
Do I retire him?
100%.
Yeah,
you can.
Or do you get him to level? No. What you do is you get him to level 20.
Oh, shit.
Well, you just
get him to level. Yeah. Train him. Just train him to level 20. It'll take you a while. That's the move.
Oh, God.
And then you have to post him for 20 ETH.
Or stick him into... Are you talking about... When you say 20 rewards, do you mean card rewards or, like, thresholds?
20 card rewards. I've won 20 card rewards.
Start churning thresholds with him. But that you're playing that game of you need to shoot 250 and no more. Yeah. Yeah. Torture yourself.
What you're saying is playing with literally like,
the 250 game. Yeah,
That's playing with fire, though. I don't know. I don't know that I want to do that.
You're like hoping for DNPs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only thing that I'm missing on that card is he's 26 years old. If he'd be 20 years old, then you know, it'd be the ultimate Holy Grail card. But
20s everywhere. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of special though, because when I bought my Daniel Parejo rare, who holds a special place in my heart, it just happened to be the Jersey Mint. I didn't plan it; it just happened, kind of like your Vanaken, but not quite as exceptional. So yeah, it's one of those where it's like,
I
love that.
Do you care about that? Like, do you go at it? Like, you said that the Kamavinga one was basically by accident. Like, you were like, oh.
No, the Kamavinga one wasn't accident. The Kamavinga one, yeah, it was accident that I was there at the right time.
That's what I mean,
I wouldn't have bought it if it wasn't the jersey, do you know?
Right.
So, like, I do look at it. If I go to buy a card, it could be anyone. It could be someone completely uncollectible. And I look at the market. I look at the prices. I look at the number. I look at the XP. And I look at the price they're listed for. And then I'll always try and... I'll just make the judgment, do you know? Just try and get, if you can get the jersey, great. If you can get a lower number, great. And if you can get more XP, great. And it's all just a balancing act of that versus who's selling and what they're willing to give you him for.
I bought a Yari Vershaeren limited jersey mint the other day. Purely like, okay. I have a Vershaeren rare. I had no intention of buying a limited, but I happened to be in the auction because it was any moment of the day because I was in there and Yari came up and I was like, oh, it's a jersey mint. And I bid and I was like, oh, let me see where the bid, like, I'm not going to overpay for a card I don't really want or need. But it was like, it was just being priced where the others were. I was like, oh, I'll bid on a Yari jersey mint. Somebody will outbid me because they'll realize it.
And now
I don't use it. If anybody wants to overpay for it, I'm sure I would happily sell it. But
no, lovely. Yeah, no, fair play. I am dying for a pee. I've been drinking beers and it's been an hour and 20 minutes and I've moved. So I'm going to run for a pee. I don't know if you're wrapping up, if you're still talking.
Well, I was going to wrap up like 10 minutes ago. But John, thank you for coming on. This has been the Sorare podcast brought to you by RotoWire, sponsored by Sorare. John, that was a ton of fun. Thank you very much. We're definitely going to have you back on. But do you want
to? I'd love to.
Before you run, do you want to just plug where everybody can find you?
I'll just. Don't want to leave. I'm not fucking leaving. Sorry, I keep cursing. I've really ruined your monetization. So Far So Rare podcast. If you're in the podcast, Apple, Spotify, I basically try and talk to someone smarter than me each week. Not necessarily smarter, just more fun. And talk shite every week to someone different. Few big guests lined up. Big guests lined up, which is exciting. Bit different for me. And yeah, follow me there. I'm on YouTube if you're into that stuff, and Twitter and whatever else. I'm doing a giveaway on Twitter at the minute, but I'm not. Everyone loves giveaways, don't they? I'm not going to plug that too much. But yeah, just thanks for having me on, guys. It's great. I listen every week. I won't listen this week, so I'm kind of gutted because I've been here. So like, yous have ruined my listening for next week. But here we are. But yeah, genuinely, thank you so much. And I'm going to have yous on one at a time on my podcast just to get more mileage out of it.
There you go. There you go. Awesome. All right. Thank you, Andy. I'll talk to you next week. If everybody has a topic you'd like us to cover, feel free to reach out to us wherever you do. All right. Thanks, guys.
See ya.